Hello, Pisces, and welcome to The Shape of Time, the 2024-25 Astrology Studio Reading. I'm Eric Francis Coppolino, your friendly neighborhood astrologer and dog nibbler, here with a little more about your astrology, a little, maybe a lot, who knows. I only have a few main points to make, and I'm going to do what I've been doing in many recent readings, which is I'm going to talk about the grouping of events that is currently taking place from Aquarius out to Gemini, and your sign is situated right in the middle of that encounter. Also mention a few things I have not talked about. We are including the Eye of the Centaur for Pisces reading. There's a lot of readings. The Eye of the Centaur for Pisces reading, we'll put that on your delivery page, because there's things in there that are essential to this reading that I am not going to remember that I said, and really actually shouldn't say twice, because you never say it quite the same the second time. Just a quick look at where we are at today in the shape of time. There are two things going on. I'm talking to you at 10:28 a.m. on Friday, 2 days ahead of the new moon, 2 days ahead of my 60th birthday. So I am one of your fellow fish. As I speak, probably still Gemini rising. That was an hour ago, so yes, it is still Gemini rising. And we can see there's a Moon-Venus conjunction coming. The way you can see that is the Moon is right near Venus, but the Moon's number is lower than Venus, and we know that the Moon moves faster than Venus. That means that later on today there's going to be a Moon-Venus conjunction. It's always a good idea to look at the chart for the time that you're doing the reading. So hence I'm doing this, and don't worry about what things mean first. It's just better to concern yourself with what they are. Once you have a concept of what they are, the meaning comes in. And it's not quite as anarchistic as everything means whatever it means to you, but it is true that everything means whatever it means to you within the context of the parameters of astrology, which are pretty wide and loose. So Moon-Venus conjunction in Aquarius, that is friendly, and looks like it's a good time to be with friends. Another thing happening today that Sally Brompton, my favorite sun sign horoscope columnist, thought was positively spectacular was that there's right now going on a conjunction of Mercury and Neptune. Mercury is ahead of Neptune, the number's lower, moves faster than Neptune, obviously. And so with a lower number moving faster, we know that Mercury is making its approach to Neptune. That happens a few times a year, but it happens all over the place. Well, no, this only happens, can only happen once a year, actually. Therefore, it'll happen in Pisces approximately once a year. But it's happening today, during your birthday season. So that's somewhat variable. That can slip and slide. But we've got two conjunctions going on right now while I'm doing this reading. Conjunctions are the beginning of cycles. And all of the astrology that we are looking at for this time in our lives is about the beginning of cycles. There are a lot of conjunctions coming up. The first and most important for you of which is the conjunction of the Moon and the Sun in Pisces, at the Pisces new moon. That takes place on very early Eastern time on Sunday morning. So that's I think that aspect is very much the heart of the matter for Pisces astrology this year. That is really, talking about for everyone, that's a pretty good solar return chart to have. I discovered yesterday that this conjunction is conjunct Tarawaya Haka something from Iroquois mythology. This is the corn goddess. And so the corn god, there's a similar named goddess who's the goddess of beans and tobacco and squash and everything. But the actual conjunction to a trans-Neptunian object orbiting our sun, a classical Kuiper object with an approximately 300-year orbit, I think 292, is this Iroquois corn god who feeds the people, who's the god of maize. He's the good sun who fell, who descended and incarnated on Earth, the good son of the one creator, the great spirit. And so without, having to need the details of Iroquois creation, we're talking about a myth of fecundity and abundance and having enough food. And as I used to think that Paul Simon said in one of his I'll think of which song this is, but I used to think he said food is the bottom line for everyone. What he actually was saying is truth is the bottom line for everyone. But I think my friend Paul Simon was being way idealistic, and I personally don't think that the truth is the bottom line for nearly anyone. I would encourage it to be the bottom line for you, but food, definitely the bottom line. And with the new moon on Sunday conjunct the god of food, Native American, you can count on there being food. So I'm going to work with a couple of different charts. One of them is, of course, going to be the chart for the Aries solar eclipse coming up in 1 month. 1 month from today, in fact. There's going to be a great shadow cast diagonally, basically from Mexico and West Texas, clear up through New England and southeastern Canada. If you're within 500 miles of that thing, a day or two drive, go for it. It is very, very rare to be in the path of totality of a total solar eclipse. They happen like over the Indian Ocean, or they happen over China, or have one over Antarctica or something like this. Here we have one that's kind of like a Grubhub coming right to us. And 500 miles is nothing. And the beauty of a total solar eclipse is it doesn't matter if you can see the sun, because it's going to get dark wherever you are. And that's real interesting to experience that. But I want to come to that second. First, I want to talk about, starting now, I want to describe this chart for the new moon taking place on Sunday. It is quite an exciting chart. And so this is what it looks like. I like to make these charts big, and as you probably know, I'm not really into doing the whole edit the graphics in stuff. It makes these videos possible because I'm not sitting in the editing console for 8 hours to make a 15-minute video. And this is kind of fun, actually. So this is my actual chart for this blown up from this. And you can see that the moon and the sun make their conjunction at 2017. That's at 5 o'clock Sunday morning. And it is right on the right as the third decanate of Pisces begins. And it is all I can say is that it's a really lovely new moon chart. And one of the reasons why it is so is because it is talking to this conjunction taking place in Taurus. And the earth signs are all very important let's get some more light here. The earth signs are all very important to the water signs. The aspects are almost all friendly between the water signs and the earth signs. And this conjunction is especially exciting. This conjunction comes up in April 20th, and it is the alignment of the ruling planet of Pisces, Jupiter. I don't use Neptune as the ruling Pisces. Neptune certainly has an affinity for Pisces, but the classical ruling planet is Jupiter. So I like, even because I work with all these planets, And I you know, work with minor aspects and minor planets and all of this stuff. I think, personally, I think it's very important to understand the fundamental basis of astrology, which is classical astrology. So I always make sure that I am grounding my astrology in classical astrology before I start getting into the new stuff. And there's plenty in the classical astrology. You can find out almost anything you need to know. So one of the things in classical is that Jupiter is the ruling planet of Pisces, which is very good for you because this is going to be a very, I hate to use the word beneficial, but helpful, transformative in a positive and life-affirming way coming up. And so this new moon is talking right to it. You can tell it's talking right to it because that 20 is very close to that 19. It's only half a degree off, and it's a 60-degree aspect. And this conjunction brings the ruling planet of Pisces, Jupiter, in Taurus, a sign associated with real wealth and real abundance and with food and with your cow and things like that. Basically the things you make to make food and shelter is going to be forming this conjunction to Uranus. And this is taking place in house number 3. That's the house of local affairs, commerce, communication, writing, and trade. So who these days is not involved in some form of, well, not necessarily local, but yes, you have to buy your potatoes somewhere. But communication, commerce, and trade. Almost everyone suddenly is involved in communication, commerce, and trade. There was a time when astrology writers would make reference to activities involving publishing in the ninth house. And I read years and years ago, I read some critique of an old astrology book where someone said, well, who the hell is into publishing? You're an astrology author. Of course, you're into publishing. What's publishing got to do with, Joe Bloggs on the street or Jane Hardhat? Well, today, everyone just about is involved in some kind of communication trade activity because we're all plugged into the internet. But the beauty of this conjunction, which again takes place right after this set of conjunctions, 1 month later, is that this is in a sign related to real stuff, Taurus. And furthermore, it is in your third place. And let me just show you why that is so, and then why I think that is so significant. Here it is in the context of the whole chart. Pisces, place 1. Aries, sign of the eclipse, place 2. Place 3, which I'm talking about first, because of the Jupiter connection, this zone of the chart is local communication, like postcards and calling cards and local phone calls. And then, in my opinion, trading with anyone who is either immediately local, meaning you could potentially walk there or drive there on Saturday morning, come home and cook what you bought, or people whose names you know when you conduct business. So I think that knowing the person personally makes it a third house transaction. And there are some people who like to do business making sure that they know everyone personally. I'm one of them. I want to know the boss. So wherever I go, I want to know the names of the servers in the diner and want to know the whole bit when they dug the hole in the ground to build the place. And so that all makes it a third house transaction. So my point here, without meaning to go on about astrology, right? This reading is not about astrology. This reading is about your experience of astrology. This is my secret alchemical blend of green tea and Moroccan mint in this lovely handmade cup. This is one of my third house things. Third house Taurus. I want all my cups handmade. I can't do the handmade mason jars. That's not safe. Okay. This is a boon in terms of whatever it is you're doing, make sure that you get on the local brainwave of that, and you are working the local territory. This conjunction is going to be forming for another month and a half from where I am now. Beat the pavement. Get out there and make contacts and figure out what's going on in your community and look for the local angle on whatever it is you're doing, if such interests you, if such is of importance or excites you in some way. But I can all but promise outright that this will be very helpful to you to have your feet on the ground in the local area and to make sure that you take any chance to not do a transaction as an online transaction and take any opportunity to make that a local in-person transaction, and that any long-distance transactions you make, if possible, that you talk directly to someone whose name you can get. You may find this is a habit that you love. You may find this works for you as a way of doing business all the time, that you learn something, you have a breakthrough, something opens up for you. So this Jupiter-Uranus conjunction, which is, where is it shown? That's it, shown right here. Again, it's a few degrees out right now, but this only happens once every 13 years, and Uranus has an 84-year orbit. It does not come back to the neighborhood any time soon. It just doesn't. So you can count this as, fair to say, once-in-a-lifetime event. There's a few once-in-a-lifetime events coming up, and this is the first one. Okay, so next deal. Let's talk about, to sum that up, the new moon is directly talking to this stuff. That is a sextile aspect, and that is, how do I do this? It's like I even like to play with a thing called the true mirror, which is supposed to make it easy for me to not work in mirror image. This, it is not only the events happening, it is the fact that they are connected that gives you access, that makes them available, that makes them right within reach, but you need to go toward them. It's the third house. It's the local area. Bring yourself to what you're doing. Stand among those you are in any way involved with doing trading or whatever it might be. Okay. Now, speaking of trading, speaking of financial stuff, this is a let's stick with a solar return chart. Now, the new moon, and notice that Mercury is in the first degree of Aries. Mercury, see that Mercury, that little green guy there? See that thing there? This is how you read a chart. This is not so mysterious. Its address is first 00 means first degree because 24 arc minutes is halfway into the first degree. There is no zeroth degree. Mercury with zero and a little more here is the first degree of Aries. That is called the Aries point. Mercury is direct. It is not near shadow phase yet. That is coming up, but it's not there yet, not at the time of this new moon. And so you've got Mercury direct. Mercury is still taking new territory, and it's not where it will be reclaiming old territory. And so the Aries point presence of that Mercury is magnifying the scope and scale and dimension of that Mercury. It is more of that Mercury, and it gives you contact. The Aries point has this property, this very degree of the zodiac, including many offshoots going out in like eight directions from there, right? You have the Aries point coming in by way of Cancer. You can have it coming in by way of Capricorn, by way of Libra, by way of Taurus. There's a degree range in every, well, at least eight signs where you can tap into the Aries point, but there is nothing like the Aries point itself. And Mercury is right there. Mercury, the very god of commerce, communication, trade, doing things like YouTubes. And this is saying that you have the ability, your reach is expanding, whatever reach might be. Reach might be your sales contacts reach might be your it might be the scope of the communication that you put out. Now, since everyone's a big TV star like me, I'm not a baseball fan. I just play one on the internet. And so that is wonderful for getting the word out again. And the second house is about resources. So there is information coming about resources. You want to pay close attention to all of this. On the money thing, I'm not a financial professional, but I do give one piece of advice, which is to have financial professionals and to always know where you stand, to know how much cash you have available, how much credit you have available, and how much debt you have. Knowing those things alone invokes a kind of power. It is the power of basic awareness. Boots on the ground, eyes on the books, awareness of knowing. Who said you got to know your plastic from your cash? Was that Peter Gabriel? Love Peter Gabriel. So know your plastic from your cash and make some bold moves, not unthought out moves. This is a time to make some strategic moves, knowing that you have added reach. That Aries point is reach, that Uranus conjunct Jupiter, Jupiter conjunct Uranus, faster planet first, second planet second, Jupiter conjunct Uranus, that too is reach and expansion and increase of value. And we're all, I mean, sadly, in the age of the internet, one of the best things about it, and I think by far one of the worst things about it, is that every last thing has become transactional. And you might want to have a haven from that you design, a place in your life that is not transactional, and know the difference between when something is transactional and when something is not transactional. But when there's an exchange of money, that is transactional. And you have ways to make those transactional events less so by recognizing at all times the human element that is involved. So even if you paid for your breakfast and someone served you, they still made you breakfast. And then you can just say, thank you for breakfast. Not thank you for serving me this plate of eggs and potatoes when I paid you $15, which is way overpriced to do it, but rather recognizing, apart from the transaction, the fact that they put food in front of you in a world where maybe we don't think so here in the West, but I assure you that food is the bottom line for everyone, as Paul Simon did not say. So Mercury on the Aries point. What else is this talking to? Let's see. Do we go there? Let's talk about that while we're on the subject of Mercury. So outside of this purple zone, this purple zone, this is a little, this line's a little bit faint here. It's not really faint, but it's just not coming up that good in video. Outside of this zone here, this from here to here, is Capricorn. And the 11th is also a very important house of commerce and a house of money, because it is the second of the 10th, and the 10th is really the house of your profession. Here, place 10. Place 11, as the second of the 10th, is the place where the money from the profession comes from. Now, Mercury is going to be making a 90-degree angle. Mercury, which is here now, it's too quick of a planet to get drawn in, but let's put it in. Let's put it in. And I'm going a little bit lavish on the astrology today, and I hope that you find it interesting. And I want you to know that I don't shoot from the hip on the on the astrology. We all know that I'm an expert on viral sequence provenance and the fraud involving the polymerase chain reaction analytical device. I put as much work into understanding astrology as I do into putting into understanding those things. And the thing with astrology is, since it's so esoteric and so arcane, anyone can throw any bullshit at you, and you're likely to believe it, because how the hell do you know? Because if you haven't read like 75 astrology books, but that's not right. And there's only so much astrology I can expect you to know, so I'm telling you a little bit about it. So here is Mr. Mercury today, conjunct Neptune. Soon it's going to be on the Aries point, and then soon it is going to pass through this territory outlined in yellow here, which is an early cardinal sign Libra, an early cardinal sign Capricorn, because Mercury is going to be there probably next week. It's going to pass through once in the retrograde. It's not going to go back that far. So this is an important time. Now, what's this about? So these houses are all financial houses. House 8 is financial. It's about wills, trust, legacies, inheritances, and partnerships, mutual shared investments. The 11th is financial because it's about the money coming in from the 10th, the 2nd of the 10th, just as the 8th is the 2nd of the 7th. The 11th is the 2nd of the 10th. Money is involved there. And the 2nd is the 2nd of the 1st. Anything that's a 2nd of anything is money coming in. And so it happens that the financial houses are primarily houses 8, 11, and 2, not in that order. Most people say 2, 8, and then 11. And most people don't even remember that the 11th is a financial house, but it is. Very important one. And Mercury is involved in all of this. Mercury is going to come into these. Can you see these lines here, these yellow lines? I'm going to go right in close so you can see this. These yellow lines here. Mercury is about to jump in and pluck all those strings. And Mercury is immediate. Most of the planets on that that I've outlined on that pattern are not in our immediate grasp. They're outer planets of various different kinds, but Mercury brings them right in. That's what happens when an inner planet talks to an outer planet. That's why communication between the inner and outer planets is so important. For example, Chiron. But in your own chart, when you're looking at your own chart and you don't know what to look for, which is what an astrologer teacher should be saying, what do you look for? What do you look for first? Well, you may not look for it first, but once you're at the level where you can say, ah, Venus, that's an inner planet. Oh, Pluto, that's an outer planet. Look at the contact between inner and outer planets, and you will learn a lot about yourself. And Mercury, an inner planet, which represents your relationships, and it represents in many ways your home life. It's a very important planet for Pisces, and represents commerce and communication, state of mind, no matter what, is passing through this territory. And there is information here about paying very close attention to all of the matters in those houses, in particular, paying attention to what is going on with your family's finances. Pay attention to your family's finances. What is going on? What is going on with the elders? What is going on with your peers? What is going on with anything that may directly or indirectly influence you? At least gather basic intel on that. And you don't need to call them up sounding like you're calling from the FBI. You just need to call up and say, or stop over for lunch or whatever people do, and say, what's up? How's it going? How's things? Almost every conversation goes in the direction of money sooner or later. And because you're a Pisces, people are likely to just tell you things that they weren't planning on saying anyway without you even asking the question. Or you can conduct yourself the way that I do in my interviews, which is I ask what's called the little kid question. That's what I call it, the little kid question. Ask the obvious question. So when I'm interviewing a flat earther, I don't get into like esoteric scientific experiments and line of sight and whether NASA is real. I asked a little kid question. Mommy, why is it dark at night? and then you listen for the answer. So come up with your version of the mommy, why is it dark at night question, and just listen to what people say, but really listen to what they say. And it's better if you don't argue. It's better if you ask questions and let people make their point and not challenge them so that they don't think that you're their adversary. I guess this is friendly manipulation 101 when it comes to getting information that you need. A less interrogatory approach is helpful, and I find a let them just tell you approach. So I can assure you these contacts need to happen. They're likely to happen. You're going to find yourself in them possibly unexpectedly, and keep them private. One of the issues about the 11th, where there's all of this family stuff. I mean, I'm sure that I'm the only person in the world who's manually drawn this quad conjunction into all of my charts. And it's a conjunction of Pholus, Quasar, Ixion, and Cupido, different types of bodies, all slow moving and all in early Capricorn. And they are talking to the elements in the eighth, which is the important one is logos, very important one about things making sense in language, things being put into comprehensible words that you can understand because the words are clear. And then this thing, Salacia. Salacia in the second house. Now, when you think Salacia, what are you thinking? Salacious. But actually means salty. And I have spent a fair amount of time analyzing the nature of this influence, 270-ish year orbit. So it's a slow mover. It's a classical Kuiper object. And Salacia is not about salaciousness at all. My delineation, it's about the sea nymph Salacia, who becomes the consort of Neptune. Neptune marries a sea nymph, and neither of them are salacious characters. Neptune, I think, one of the great characters in mythology, characterized by Tolkien in the Silmarillion as really one of the great and most humane gods, Ulmo, the Lord of Waters. And so my read on Salacia is that it is about what is sexually appropriate for you. And I don't mean what is sexually appropriate for you when you ask others' permission, or sexually appropriate for you when your partner tells you what's sexually appropriate for you. I don't mean sexually appropriate for you in anal retentive mode. I mean what is really appropriate for you, what you actually want and what you actually value, whether you think you can get it or not. And so you need to know this. And this has a connection with your ability for your finances to flow. The connection is not made often enough between being sexually fluid, fluent, open, and honest, and financial matters going a little bit better rather than a little bit worse. Because our sexuality is our most important internal resource. And it happens that Salacia, which to me, you'll read all kinds of delineations of Salacia, including the cheap ones that say, ooh, Salacia is really salacious. But they didn't. I worked this out with Douglas Harper, the editor of the Online Etymology Dictionary, and had like a etymology class based on the word salacious and the goddess Salacia. This is going back about 5 years because I know Doug Harper, the author of my favorite dictionary. Turns out salaciousness is not even vaguely associated with Salacia or in the delineation, in the myth, and so forth. Also, there's the theme of saliency, that which stands out. So pay attention to what stands out. And I would say do yourself a little favor and let your appropriate sexuality stand out a little bit. Be who you are. Who knows? Maybe you're one of these complete freaks of nature known as heteronormative people. Well, in our day, it's quite radical to be heteronormative. There's a whole center on the other side of that wall called the LGBTQ Center. Lesbian, gay, bisexual, transsexual, queer, questioning. Anything but a little heteronormative. Anything but, hey, Susie, would you like to go out for a milkshake? So, second house. More second house coming. Guess what? Even more second house coming. All right, let's go to the eclipse. Let's go to the eclipse. The eclipse, this zone here, this here in this chart, this is the 4-8 chart. You've seen this a lot if you're watching the Somewhere in Between series. Sorry, Eye of the Centaur. So I did them so close together they blend into one, but they're definitely not. So Mercury, again, is very active in the chart for this eclipse. So the eclipse is, first of all, the eclipse is crazy. The eclipse is Moon, Sun, Chiron, conjunct to the arc minute. 19 degrees and 24 arc minutes. There's only 23,000 arc minutes in the wheel. Well, no. The astrology wheel is like a roulette wheel with 23,000 little slots. That's a lot. I think they have like 102. But as it turns out, Moon plus Sun plus Chiron all landed in slot 1924. 19 degrees, 24 minutes. It's crazy. I would have said that would be impossible. If you had given me like an astrology quiz years ago and said, what are the chances of there being a total solar eclipse exactly conjunct Chiron to the arc minute, I would have said they are not very good. You're likely to get it maybe within a degree or half a degree or something like that, or, you know, on a really lucky day, a quarter of a degree. Well, it turns out that it's conjunct to the arc minute. Why is that important for you? Because the second house is your house of resources. Your second house is your house of the most important resource of all, which I haven't mentioned, even though I've talked to fucking Blue Streak about the second house, is your self-respect. It is the value that you put upon yourself. As A Course in Miracles says, every decision you make stems from what you think you are. I'll say it slowly so you can write it on the mirror. Every decision you make stems from what you think you are. You little, you big, or you worthless, or what? So you, when you make a decision, remember that what you're actually deciding is what you think you are. And you're voting for that based on the decision that you make. Because the decision is an expression of what you think you are. And Chiron through the second has really been stirring the pot on this whole matter of self-esteem. For everyone, it has really been either dragging a lot of people through a self-actualization crisis that they're not interested in. For many, it is a self-actualization crisis. For some, is a self-actualization opportunity that they're very, very, very interested in. And some people are just flailing around, not knowing that the ultimate root of their issue is that they are just not involved in a self-actualization process. Everything is projected outside of them because we're in the digital age, and that's what you do. You don't have sexual fantasies anymore. You let this thing do, not maybe not you, but the space of what we call porno is basically just a sexual visualization service. Not as good as your own mind. And you could say a thousand different ways in which some internal capacity or some, well, internal capacity means the function of the inner senses, such as memory and such as the cognitive function, almost entirely broadcast out, farmed out, outsourced to China. And Chiron, Moon, Sun is saying, take back your externalized capacities, reclaim your inner senses. In one of these notebooks, I've got the notes of my is this it? No, not this one. It's over there. I hope. My conversation with Mark Stallman at the La Canard on Chain restaurant a couple of years ago, where I got my Thomas Aquinas version of the inner senses, and I added a few of my own since Thomas Aquinas is my old study partner. Claim back your interior space. The tragedy of digital is the externalization of interior space, thought, feeling, memory, language-making capacity, and now even creativity and thinking based on this very serious problem of generative AI. Because what the goal is, and remember that technology has no soul. It's inherently immoral. There's nothing. It's amoral. There's no morality to it except what makes money and what doesn't. That all human functions should be taken over, and we should all just be consumers. The problem is that when you're a consumer, you're not a creator, and when you're not a creator, you don't grow. You do not self-actualize. You do not develop your own interior capacity for learning, growth, learning, perception, your most important resources. I mean, and to have Aries on the second place here, which you do, is to say that though this sounds obvious, it is most true for Pisces, that your sense of self, your self, Aries, on house two, which it only is for Pisces, is saying you are your most important resource. You, the fact that you're alive and breathing, can get up and walk around, you're your most important resource of all. If you have yourself, you have everything. And so this is why I'm strongly encouraging you to have and develop yourself. That's all. It's like Bitcoin mining, only it's you're mining yourself. You're doing your internal generative actual process of learning, becoming, and discovering. And a little bit later, I'm going to give a, you know, because it's my 60th birthday, I've got my notes for a journalism class. I'm going to teach journalism class on Planet Waves FM. And this is all about your confidence, your curiosity, and your tenacity. If you're in possession of your confidence, which means the willingness to be unconfident in situations where you would be, it would help to be confident, but fuck it, you're not. You don't feel quite like you fit in. Well, you just proceed anyway, and the basis for that proceeding can be your curiosity, because curiosity will get you anywhere. It never killed a cat either. They have 9 lives, and like the first 5 of them are curiosity, so they always live through their curious endeavors. Like, what would it be like to jump from that terrace to that terrace on the 20th floor? Ooh, now I'm stuck on my neighbor's terrace. And then I want to jump back. And you'll hope your neighbor returns, your very curious cat. Your curiosity, your tenacity, and your even meek attempt to coexist where you don't feel confident, that's self-actualization in a nutshell right there. And if you can play with those things, you are going to have a lot, you're going to get a lot more value out of your life. And the one thing about confidence to remember, and I learned this as a fairly young journalist, because it wouldn't be fair to say that I'm more confident than I seem, but it would be fair to say that I had all the same problems of being self-conscious, not quite knowing exactly how to handle myself in public situations with all these grown men wearing suits around. They all seem to know what they're doing, which is mainly how to make money, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I had to learn how to function in these situations. Unfortunately, I had a job as a young guy that put me places like the American Medical Association National Convention and the National Beer Wholesalers Association and the National Institution of Beverage Importers and having lunch with the governor of Colorado and Augie Bush III and all that stuff. And I just learned, here I am basically a little kid by today's standards, and I just learned how to be myself in that environment. And one of the most important things I learned is, and this, I think this is, you know, kind of worth a chapter, is let everyone else do all the being insecure. When you walk into a room full of people, the chances are the overwhelming majority of them, all but a few of them, are going to feel extremely awkward and insecure. Let them have that. Let them do that. That's their thing. And then you can just be curious, mildly confident, and tenacious. And it's never really in a position on someone to ask them a question or follow up question. Find out how their day is going, and if they don't like it, you go ask someone else. So there's another dog to pet. All right, a couple of more things. Let's see. And I think we're almost good between this and Eye of the Centaur. Ah, the thing. Let's conclude. No, two more. The thing. The thing one is at the time of this eclipse. Not only are the Sun, the Moon, and Chiron conjunct to one arc minute, Mercury retrograde is approaching Eris, because you know that because it's retrograde, it's going the opposite direction than normal. I'm going to draw an arrow. It's not the world's most neat arrow, but there it is. You can see that little arrow. Mercury is going in that direction. You can tell because it's retrograde. And Mercury's number is slightly higher than that of Eris, which moves more slowly. And it's not much higher at all. It's only a 3-arc-minute conjunction. Within an hour of that or so of this eclipse, Mercury makes an exact conjunction to Eris. 3 arc minutes is a very close conjunction. The closest conjunction recognized by classical Greek astrology is 11 arc minutes. 11. And the eclipse new moon is conjunct down to no arc minutes, and the Eris Mercury retrograde Eris conjunction is only 3 arc. What's going on? Why all this precision? Well, when there's precision, be precise. So Eris is. I'm thinking of my first monograph on Eris. I missed my opportunity for an astrology bestseller. Published in January 2007, my one major collaboration with Richard Tarnas, who served in his capacity as philosophy professor for this one, to help me understand postmodernism, which is what Eris is about, but it's also about the faceting and fragmentation of self. And retrograde Mercury, exactly conjunct Eris, in your second house of self-value, self-esteem, confidence, and curiosity, your resources, your most important resources, the most important one being yourself, Mercury is saying, retrograde Mercury, exactly conjunct Eris, is saying, get yourself together and stop with all this faceting and fragmenting of your character. Be one person. Be the one person who you are. We sacrifice a tremendous amount of self-confidence by fragmenting ourselves and thinking that really we're just different people. When we're not different people, we are one. We are one person. I'm not trying to sound like Babaji here, but we are. You're one critter, and if you have a lot of voices in your mind, you've got to find out the source of those voices and what they're telling you. They're probably ancestors and teachers and various and sundry dead people and people who harmed your self-esteem. Fuck them. Claim you for yourself. Claim who and what you are about yourself. That is really the overwhelming theme of these charts. Now, there's one last thing. There's the conjunction of there's a conjunction in there. You can't see it so good, but it's at 24 degrees, and it looks like 19 arc minutes. So it's right in the pocket. That's your typical conjunction, you know, half a degree. or something. I know my friend Steve Gemario likes to use 15-degree conjunctions, 15 degrees. But he didn't use all these planets. And when you're using I prefer to start with the closest conjunctions or aspects in the chart, and then work your way out. There's plenty that are close. And some people like to say, ooh, that's at 5 degrees of a sign, and that's at 25 degrees of a sign. Eureka, that's a conjunction. Look, they can sort of shout to each other. Nah. Like, I personally, being your friendly neighborhood investigative reporter covering diagnostic testing fraud, wearing a slightly different hat, is start precise and work your way out. So why the fuck am I saying this? In the middle of this conjunction is Amor. That thing, that weird-looking thing like a pussy, but it's a friendly-looking thing like a pussy. That it's a hard glyph to draw. I can never quite get it right. I can never get these sides exactly in proportion. I probably need to make the pencil strokes in the right order. But this is called Amor, and it's exactly conjunct Mercury retrograde conjunct Eris, which is about healing from fragmentation. And Amor in a phrase is the conditions placed on unconditional love. So if you don't love yourself unconditionally, then you're struggling with anxiety, fear, guilt, self-judgment, and so forth. That's the problem of the ego. That's the purpose of the spiritual path, to be able to address all these conditions on unconditional love and learn to listen to your inner teacher. On the path to learning to listen to your inner teacher, you're going to encounter a lot of conditions on unconditional love, just how it is. So you encounter those conditions and you learn what they are and you address them. So the question is, what are the conditions on unconditional love? Amor is right in the pocket. And as far as conditions on unconditional love, I don't think that it's a coincidence that I'm sure that glyph is designed to look like a vulva. I mean, it's what it is. I mean, it's really, that's what that is. Conditions and unconditional love. What could that possibly be about? Okay, one last thing, Bob. Two times this year, well, there's heat in Pisces. There's important activity. Again, we're looking at the April 8th chart. In the April 8th chart, we've got Mars about to make a conjunction to Saturn. This, to me, looks like either a crisis or a breakthrough, and it may be both. And so there's some tension here. It's a very powerful aspect. It's right near the midpoint of Pisces. It is Mars moving in on Saturn. You want to make sure that you have actual vents or creative outlets, but on a bad day, vents, and on a good day, creative outlets for all forms of sexual proper energy, quote-unquote energy, whatever that is, and desire. Mars is about desire. Mars is saying, I want. Saturn is saying, well, maybe you can, maybe you can't. And most people are going to take that as no. But Mars is going to keep going, and Mars in Pisces is desire in the style of slow, steady persistence. Put the two of them together in Pisces, and that is the power of water washing away at the structural integrity of Saturn. So, you know, maybe you think of Mars and Pisces as the waves crashing on a jetty, which the jetty goes out like 300 feet out to sea slightly break up the waves and to put a little shelter around the riptides so you can go out in the water a little more safely. It is still the ocean. It can swallow you any time it wants. Or any time that you're careless. So you want to abide by the law of the sea and be careful around anything that is watery in nature, treat it with respect. I'm lucky. I grew up by the ocean. My mother was very fond of going to the beach and swimming in the ocean as a girl, and did so in various parts of Long Island and in Brooklyn when the water was nice, and taught me to respect the ocean. And so you learn how to deal with waves. You learn how to conduct yourself around the ocean. And that's what this aspect is saying. Mars conjunct Saturn. This, again, is 1 month from now. Now, there's one other thing going on that takes place in Pisces, and I wonder if I have any representation of it. Well, this is close enough. Nessus is a slow mover in Pisces at the moment. And what's going to happen in July is that, so Nessus is a centaur. It's like Chiron. Represents the, it's a bit of a centaur from the dark side. It addresses consequences, and the glyph is supposed to have a little arrow pointing up on it like that. So I've just added it in. That's Melanie Reinhart for the Nessus Sagittarius Association, as I was told the story. So Saturn is going to make a close call conjunction within 1 degree, but not exact, in July. Then Mars is going to retrograde. So this is a cautionary aspect saying you have about 7 months between July and February of 25 to address a certain issue. I don't know what that issue is. But once you know what it is, I suggest working on it much sooner rather than later, not to wait, because anything in Pisces takes time, it takes preparation, and there are layers of reality that must be revealed. They must somehow make themselves known, and things in Pisces tend to make themselves known only slowly. So that's why you want time to figure this out. And the chances are we'll have some theme of addressing consequences. And while you're at it, and while you're busy addressing consequences, you want to address the making of consequences before it happens. You want to always be working with the law of unintended consequences and various stages of understanding when you are either resolving or creating karma. You can only really do one or the other at any one time. And so you want to always lean in the direction of resolving karma rather than making up karma, and that counts for a lot. And I think that is what I have to say to you. Besides, very happy birthday or solar return. Or if you're Pisces rising, thank you for checking this out. I have a lot of visitors here who are backstage pass holders who just like to watch these readings no matter what sign they're for. Hello to all of you. And thank you for more than anything, your trust and the time that you invest in these readings and your money. But I think that the trust and the investment of time together are really the gesture of investment and involvement. Okay, that's what I have to say. Thank you again. Lots of love. And bye for now.